I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, I'm a journalist based out in Reykjavik, Iceland, where tonight, it's a Sunday night, it's actually 11:30 at night, but as I'm recording this, it's still dim daylight outside. It's getting to that time of the year where darkness isn't really a thing here. As you may have heard if you've listened to the podcast for a while, in the wintertime Iceland is just pretty much 20 plus hours of darkness with a little bit of dim daylight in between. And everyone's very insular and inward looking. And in the summertime it's the opposite. The sun rises very high into the sky. It never really drops below the horizon. And so it's quite a kind of a tumultuous environment to live in that way. It feels like the seasons change very quickly. I read somewhere that we are getting 6 minutes of extra daylight every day at the moment. So across the course of a week to 10 days, we're getting an extra hour of daylight, which does tend to mess with your circadian rhythms a little and your sleep cycle. But it also gives you a lot of energy in the summer. People have a lot of energy. I can hear them outside in the street now, even late on a Sunday night. There are people around, kind of talking and drinking, kind of chatting and walking around. So it's that high summer time of the Icelandic calendar is approaching. But even as all of this stuff is going on, I've had plenty of time to play some games. And today I'm going to talk about a game that I've found very interesting and I've spent quite a bit of time with over the last couple of months. It's a very short game. But I actually kind of took a break from it and came back to it, and I took my time with it, actually. It's a game that only takes 3 or 4 hours to complete, but I played through it in much longer than that. I spent quite a lot of time just meandering around the game world of this game, just kind of enjoying it and taking my time. It's a really fun game. It was produced here in Iceland, actually, an interesting title called Nuts. You may have heard me mention it before, so that's going to be the featured game of this episode. I've finally gotten over the finish line with it, and thought about it and let it sink in a little, and I'm looking forward to telling you about this game today. But before I do that, as is traditional, I will round up some of the other stuff I've been playing. In the last week, I actually finished Bioshock Infinite. It's not my usual genre of game. It's a narrative first-person shooter. You spend most of your time running around shooting stuff, and going through these kind of cutscenes and dialogue and story sections. It's a real roller coaster ride of a game. It felt like a fairground ride, like a world that was kind of designed to thrill you and excite you and kind of push you along through a very propulsive, interesting story. with loads and loads of combat and shooting and all of that kind of thing. But the reason that I played the game is because I've been interested in games that work with time loops and interested in games that work with ideas of infinity and things like that. And BioShock Infinite is a game that has that kind of sci-fi premise baked into the story. And I had a really good time with that game, actually. I played it in maybe 4 sittings. It's quite a long game, but I played it on easy mode just to get through it. Like I said, FPS challenge is not my cup of tea, but I really, really enjoyed it. It has a very good ending. It really takes all of these different threads of a very interesting story and characters that have very interesting timelines, and they're all interconnected in cool ways, and it came together spectacularly well. It really felt like a Netflix show or like a sci-fi HBO kind of a series that you would watch, like Snowpiercer, which I also enjoyed recently. It's maybe a game that I think would translate very well to the screen. I'm not sure if I will do a full episode on BioShock. I think I've kind of said everything that I want to say about it here. Maybe I'll do a little spoiler cast for my patrons, because the ending is so interesting. But yeah, that was a great one. I've also been dipping back into Cozy Grove. It's a game that I kind of dunked on in the last episode, but I've kept coming back to it, and I have to say, despite the fact that I'm not overly thrilled with the gameplay of Cozy Grove, it is, it's one of those games that's designed to be played daily. It has a couple of hours, one hour max probably, of activities that you can do in a day, and then your little buddy who's a campfire on this haunted island tells you, come back tomorrow and there'll be more things for you to do. And so that's what I've been doing, and I have to say, this spooky Animal Crossing game where you help out lost spirits with small tasks, just finding things for them around a small island, going fishing, digging things up, harvesting from trees, crafting stuff for them, finding lost mail, finding lost parcels and garments and things like that. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think I might have been sucked in to one of these Animal Crossing type games. So it was a little taste for me of the kind of the Animal Crossing hype that I missed out on last year, as a person who isn't a natural fan of these kind of games. And I have to say, I'm getting a little more now. I see why people like checking in and doing some kind of unchallenging tasks just for a short while. And that's something that will come up in the Nuts review today, actually. The idea of kind of quotidian task that you can check in with. And it's kind of repetitive and it's kind of soothing. And yeah, Cozy Grove has a bit of that in it, and it's growing on me. So maybe I'll come back to Cozy Grove later, or maybe it will just feature in these little intro sections. I also checked out a game called King of Seas. It's something that I was sent a review code for. It's a new kind of top-down seafaring pirate game, and I'm going to be honest, I bounced on this one pretty hard. At the start of the game, you're kind of taught how to sail, how to navigate the sea, how to carry out seafaring combat and all those kind of things as the captain of a ship on the high seas. And I played, I think, 45 minutes or an hour of it, and I did not enjoy it for a second. The first mission is you come out of the port and you have to sail to the next harbour. And so I tried to just sail around a little bit, and I kind of hit an invisible wall and the screen went black and I was taken back to the harbour because I'd gone the wrong way. Turned out I was supposed to follow the compass. I did so. And the first mission involves basically pushing the joystick up for an entire minute before you get to a place where there are multiple cutscenes that don't really need to be there. And I was like, okay, that's strange. They didn't really wow me with that first mission. It was really dull. And the second mission is to learn how to fight. And I thought, okay, maybe this is where it gets interesting. So I sailed out of the harbour ready to take on a pirate ship. Immediately crashed into a landmass, got stuck. And the pirate ship I was supposed to be taking out was destroyed by cannons. At which point the mission was complete. I had done absolutely nothing except crash into a wall and was given the captaincy of my ship. This was my proving task. And I thought at this point, I'm not sure this game has got it going on. Tried the third mission, tailed off. So King of Seas has just come out. It's a hard pass from me, but I have not really pushed through the pain barrier with it to get into the meat of the game. I'm not going to slate it completely. But I bounced on that one hard. And finally, I went back into Fallout 4. Regular listeners will know that I've had a bit of a love affair with this game. It's my first Fallout game, and I plowed through it. I think I was 70 hours in, and I got to a forking point in the story where I had to pick a side. and you have to pick a side between three different factions, all of whom are problematic in various ways. And when you align yourself with a faction at this pivotal story moment, you rule out all of the others, like the others won't work with you anymore. And so I kind of became paralyzed by indecision and enough to make me fall off a game that I was really enjoying. So that gives you some idea of the amount of indecision that I have to deal with on a daily basis just as a person. But after a break from it of a month or so, I went back in and I just completed a bunch of side missions. And the side missions in Fallout 4 are just absolutely delightful. I found a ship, like a wooden sailing ship, that was grounded. It was, for some reason, it was stuck on a building and it was crewed by robots, and I had to help them repair the broken engine and help them get to the end game of this ship. And they were all kind of crazed robots that were maybe supposed to be tourist robots, just been left to their own devices for hundreds of years, and they're crewing and defending this ship. Kind of nuts and really fun. And in that same session, I went to a small seaside town where I found a mad survivalist who's basically living alone. He talks to his gun as if it's his wife, and he's defending a town against a constant waves of attacks of wildlife, of these kind of crabs called Myalurks, that have been affected by radioactivity and that have been plaguing his town. And I helped him clear his town and navigated his weird relationship with his rifle. And I have to say, I was sucked straight back into Fallout. I think I've decided to align with the Railroad faction. If you've played Fallout, you'll know that they are the kind of the synth liberation front. And they're getting robots that have been put into slavery, and they're freeing them because they think that AI means life. So I think I've decided to go with the Railroad on this playthrough, and I'm going to get to the end of Fallout 4. I'm determined to do it. And I will say that once again I was struck by the amount of detail and the amount of good quality writing that is in Fallout 4 is just constantly taking me by surprise. There is no real fat on the game. It's like every little side mission that you do is interesting. It has characters, it has voice acting. The characters are written with care. They don't seem to be just kind of cardboard cutouts that were thrown in by writers who were being made to do too much. It's like every little side quest that you do in Fallout 4 could also be like a Netflix episode. It's another game that would lend itself to that. And it feels like that game is just absolutely packed with just A-grade story content, basically. It enriches the world, and these characters all have their own things going on. They're human characters. They're humane characters. Even though it's a kind of a silly sci-fi game in some ways, it's just very well written, and I really appreciate that. So Fallout 4, I'm back in it. I might stream it, but I'm determined to get to the end either way, so maybe I will talk about it more once I've actually finished the game. And the last thing on the menu before we talk about nuts is this show is listener-supported via Patreon. I would like to say a big thank you to my newest patron, who is on Twitter at DavJCarter. That's DavJCarter. They joined up on the $1 tier. You can join up for as little as $1 or $3 or $5 a month, whether you're a new listener who likes what you hear today, or whether you're a long-time listener who wants to dive in and support the show. As a member, you'll get extra episodes about sometimes about music, about off-topic things, or spoiler casts. There is a spoiler cast up there about, I think, Outer Wilds, for example. Sometimes if it's a game that has a really good story, I'll do an extra episode about the spoilers and the ending for patrons. You'll also get sale recommendations for the PlayStation Store and the Switch every week. I'll pull out a couple of titles that have been featured on the podcast that are available for a good price. And finally, you'll get access to our Discord community, where you can talk to all the other people that listen to the podcast and me. We've just started up a new channel for sale tips, and we've started up a new channel for future game recommendations or fresh releases, and that's already quite busy. There are a few people in our community that are on Game Pass, and I'm getting the Game Pass envy from the recommendations channel. Looks like there's some really good stuff coming out on Game Pass. So if you're interested in joining that community and supporting the show, it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild. A big thank you to all my existing patrons, and a big thank you to you if that's something that you decide to do. And with that said, let's move on and talk about the featured game of the episode, Nuts. So Nuts is a 2020 release. It was brought to my attention as part of the Short Game podcast, a podcast that I listen to every single week. It's a great one. I recommend you check it out. And the host of that show, Reagan, asked me if I knew the people involved, because it's a game that is made here in Iceland. So I think it's maybe the first game that I've played that was produced here in my adopted home country. It was made by a collective of five people who go under the names of June, Paul, Mutz, Char and Torvi. It was published by Noodle Cake. It came out originally on Apple Arcade, which is where I played it. I played it on my iPhone XS and Backbone controller. It's also available on Switch and Mac and PC, Steam, Itch, etc. It's for $20 US or £15. But if you're on Apple Arcade, you get it as part of your subscription. It was quite well regarded when it came out. There was a little bit of anticipation for it. Polygon named it as one of their most anticipated games of 2020. It won an award at Indiecade for the audio design, which is pretty spectacular, as I'll talk about later. On Metacritic, I was a little surprised by the scores, actually. It's a 69 on PC and a 64 on Switch. So I delved in a little bit and noticed that most of the reviews are good, but that score's been pulled down significantly by a 4 out of 10 GameSpot review. And I think without that 4 out of 10 GameSpot review, the game would comfortably be sitting at 7 or 8 out of 10. So make of that what you will. On how long to beat, the average time for beating this game is 3 hours. It took me 4 or 5 because I did a lot of wandering around, listening to the nature sounds, listening to this beautiful music that you can hear now, enjoying the colours and the visual design of the game, and kind of deviating from the central mission, just wandering. I kind of went into a little bit of a trance playing this game at times. It's very colourful. It's got a great palette and a great visual style. But the developers of the game describe it as a single-player surveillance mystery. Record the squirrels, report your findings, and piece together what's really going on in Melmoth Forest. And usually I read out the dev's description and then rewrite it myself, but they've just nailed it this time. I don't have a lot to add to it. Mine is not as good. I wrote a relaxed nature game with an original surveillance mechanic. But what is Nuts? It's a first-person game, and it begins when you're dropped off at the roadside, and you walk down a small path through a very colourful landscape to a caravan. And in this caravan, there is a basic living situation. There is a bunk, there is a kitchenette, there is a video player with a stack of TVs, a printer that can print freeze frames, a fax machine, a little pinboard and a waste paper bin, and a telephone. And that's basically going to be your base for the game. It moves around in the landscape from place to place, so there'll be different areas for you to explore. But the game begins with a phone call that introduces you to what you're doing. You've gotten a job in the nature, and you're going to be photographing squirrels, reporting back to an NGO through your contact called Nina, who is the only voice-acted character in the game, and she's going to be your main point of contact. And Nuts is a game with a very defined gameplay loop. At the start of each cycle, at the start of each location, you'll wake up in your caravan. There's a note by the phone saying, fax this. You pick it up by clicking on it. You click on the fax machine to send it. The phone rings. You answer the phone, and it's Nina. And she'll tell you what you're supposed to be up to. She'll tell you what your next mission is. She'll tell you a little bit about what's going on, about what the photographs are being used for. It turns out that it's like an environmentalist project where you have to document the nature in an area which is under threat from industry. And Nina is nicely voice acted. She has quite a clipped speaking style. She tells you to observe the squirrels in Melmoth Forest, gather evidence of their activities in a variety of ways. You have short conversations about your job, what you should do next, and then she'll hang up and off you go. And it feels like you're kept a little bit in the dark about the kind of the wider ramifications of what you're doing at first. But I really like that as a storytelling mechanic, actually. When the character doesn't quite know what's going on, you feel like you're learning alongside this protagonist, and you get to kind of embody the protagonist. And it's a good thing in a way, because to have a voiceless protagonist, because it really allows the player to fill that space, to fill that character with their own imagination, and to really embody them and feel like they are in the game. And the game actually walks you through the controls really nicely. It teaches you how to use the fax machine, the TVs. It teaches you to use the power generator, so you get used to working with objects, clicking on objects. It teaches you how to use cameras to take pictures and that sort of thing. And the gameplay loop is that Nina will tell you a GPS coordinate, and you can use the D-pad on the controller to make your character lift things up into your eye line. For example, a notebook with notes about what you're supposed to be doing, a GPS tracker that you can use to navigate the landscape and walk around, a camera that you can use to take snapshots and all this kind of thing. So you follow the GPS tracker to a map point, you set up the camera, you head back to your cabin, and then you hit record. And that's the first part of the gameplay loop. The game then switches to the nighttime, and at nighttime you watch the footage that the cameras have recorded. You can scrub back and forward. You're looking at the TVs, you're looking at three different televisions and a printer. You can scrub back and forwards using a tape player. You find the frames that are the most relevant. For example, if you have to find where a squirrel is going, where its nest is, then you'll have to take a photo of that. You can hit print to print out a freeze frame, fax that to Nina, and then the phone will ring. And you move on to the next task, and that's the gameplay loop of nuts. You're answering the phone, getting your task, using your GPS and your cameras to carry it out, faxing the results to Nina, and then moving on in the story. And the story is told in chapters, so the first one is quite simple. You have one camera, you have to find a squirrel, and then you have to follow it back to its nest. And the loop is such that the first time you get squirrel on camera, you'll only see it coming down a tree. So on the second day, you go out and you reposition your cameras to try and kind of guess where the squirrel's going. And then you go back to your van again, you record the footage, you see that perhaps it's jumping over a little ridge. So the next day, you go back out again and move your camera up the ridge and try and track the squirrel to its nest. And the story is separated into chapters, and each time you'll finish a mission, for example, you'll find where the squirrel nest is, or you'll find out some other things that the squirrels are doing. Then the mission ends, and you move to a new section of the landscape in Melmoth Forest, and you wake up somewhere new. So you're walking around, you're using machinery and devices, you're traipsing your way through the forest, finding pathways, stalking squirrels, and as you're doing that, you're taking in the nature, and it's kind of enjoyable, calm gameplay loop that you're engaged in. It's really nice, it's tightly designed. The mobility is very good, the walking speed is quite high, so you never get frustrated. It feels like you're always running, if you know what I mean. There is a jump button that allows you to scale the nature. I think some care has been putting into letting you navigate this landscape in the way that you want to. I think that the developers of this game have been quite mindful that there is quite a repetitive element to the game, that you're traversing the same piece of forest repetitively to try and track down the squirrels. And so they've let you do that at quite a clip that lets you keep moving along at a good pace and not wish that you could do things faster. And I think at this point it would be a good idea to talk about the audio-visual style of the game, because this is a very aesthetically pleasing game. The sound is amazing. The sounds of the nature, the sounds of the wind, the sounds of the trees rustling, the sounds of water running, the sounds of being outdoors are really, really engaging, and it's quite immersive. And then all of the small sounds are very detailed too, like the sound of the printer when you print something out. It's a very familiar sound that you'll recognize. And the sound of the phone ringing, the sound of the kind of the buttons clicking, everything that you'll interact with has a great sound that goes with it. There's been some great work done on that in the game, and it really helps to make it feel tightly designed in the specific atmosphere that Nuts has. And the visuals are just as good, actually. It's got a really bold art style. It's kind of a line-drawn environment. So in the cabin, you'll see lots of very straight lines, human-designed objects, man-made objects, televisions, the walls, the bunks, all that kind of thing, mugs, kettles, the kitchenette, the pin board where you can pin your photos, the bin where you can put photos that didn't turn out right or that weren't actually what you were looking for. It's a really nicely designed little living situation. And then out in the nature, it's a little more free-form. It gets a little more illustrative. Like the way that the land is drawn, the way the trees and cliffs and grass are rendered, it's really illustrative. It's got a graphic design feel rather than an oil painting feel. It's not meant to feel real, but it is meant to feel immersive and evocative, and it does that very well. And that kind of lack of an accurate nature depiction is accentuated even more by the color palette. It doesn't look like nature. It's not greens and browns and blue skies. It's not earthy colours. It's actually a really, really striking colour palette of pinks, purples, violet, magenta, fuchsia, acid yellow and mint green. So the landscape has got this kind of almost vapor-wavy, ombre kind of quite current colour palette, I would say. It's a colour palette that we see a lot in graphic design at this specific moment. Don't know if you've noticed, but things like, let's say the Instagram logo, which used to be this little brown square with a camera on it, has turned into a kind of ombre, pink and purple, faded design. And that seems to be the kind of the design moment that we're in. And that's very much in, it's baked into Nuts. It has that kind of fashionable graphic design feel of what's going on out there right now. And I think that in the future, that might actually make the game belong to the period that we're in. And that's not a bad thing. It's nice to see that kind of design sensibility in a game that is ostensibly about nature. And it also has some gameplay ramifications too. For example, if the whole world is pink and purple and sort of grey-blue hues, but then the thing that you're looking for, say a camera, is acid yellow and orange, then the things that you can interact with are very clearly delineated by the colour palette. You can always see the thing that you're supposed to be picking up. And it's actually very intelligent design from a gameplay point of view. It always allows you to find what you're looking for very quickly. The squirrels themselves are white, so they pop also against the backdrop. And it gives it quite a dreamy feel. Perhaps more closely related to something like Manifold Garden than to the kind of the Americana feel of Firewatch. That said, though, I think that Firewatch is a relevant comparison point for Nuts. It is quite an original game, but there are a couple of other photography games out there, for example. I mean, I haven't played it, but I've been keenly awaiting the Mac or console release of Umurangi Generation, another quite neon game based on photography. I'll be interested to play that one when it comes out and compare it to Nuts. I also had a great time with Alba, A Wildlife Adventure, another ecologically minded game with photography at its core, but that has that kind of distinct Animal Crossing sort of art style to it. So Nuts is quite original, but it does have that Firewatch vibe, especially because you are in a cabin in nature doing a job with a female handler who calls you on the phone. So that's about as far as it goes, maybe. I mean, in Firewatch, you spend a lot of your time hiking through the nature, and you do that in this game too. But Firewatch is a very different kind of game. It's narratively different. It has that kind of that feeling of your character is voiced for a start, so it's more of a character piece, whereas this is more of an activity-based game, more of a gameplay-based game. And the characters aren't so kind of loose and bored and sort of flirtatious in the same way as Delilah in Firewatch. Nina is very focused, she's very on mission, she's kind of tightly wound, she's all business all the time. And it doesn't have that kind of hazy camping afternoon feeling of Firewatch, that kind of halcyon Americana style, where they've used those old American national park posters to create the art style. This game's much more modern. It has kind of a Nordic feel to it in some way. I think that comes partly from you're in nature, which I guess is supposed to be the UK, because it's called Melmoth Forest, which sounds like a UK forest. But it has a Nordic feel in both the design, the crisp design of it, and the way the objects are handled. It made me think of when I've been out in a cabin in the Icelandic wilderness, for example. There's no kind of city around you to distract you, and so small objects become more important, like the mug that you drink your coffee from. There is only one mug, and like the warm socks that you pull on in the morning. Like, objects just seem to gather more gravity when there are less of them. And so the way that this game is designed, with those kind of objects that pop against the background, it did remind me in that way, through the design, of a cabin trip in the Nordic region, more so than anywhere else. There's something about it that has a kind of a clinging Nordic feel. And when I looked at that very negative GameSpot review, I think that's what they were reacting to. If Firewatch is the kind of the warm, fuzzy sunshine, and the Nuts is it's kind of slightly cold by comparison, but that doesn't mean it's worse, it just means it's different. But the GameSpot guy reacted badly to that. So it's an interesting comparison to put it next to Firewatch, even if it's only superficially similar. But as the game develops, the story picks up. I'm not going to spoil it here. I'm going to keep it pretty top level. I'm not going to spoil the game, because I would hope that if you're interested in this game, if you do like Firewatch and first-person games about nature and kind of puzzles and repetitive activities, kind of quite chill games, and quite artistic games that you might give Nuts a try, because it is a really good game. So I'm not going to go into the plot too much, but it happens across 6 chapters. You'll start off just following one squirrel to its nest. You'll end up trailing multiple squirrels around larger areas. The 3rd chapter of the game is the one where I got the most stuck, because it's quite a big area and it's quite a long chase to get to the scene that you have to photograph and send back to Nina. But there are new mechanics that are introduced throughout the later chapters, so it does stay fresh. It does seem like they've tried to up the ante of the gameplay from chapter to chapter to keep you interested, whether you're using multiple cameras or multiple targets, and different mechanics that I won't spoil for you in case you decide to play the game. And little story twists here and there. But the main plotline of Nina and the Viago Institute and the kind of the NGO that you're working for and the nature that that company is working against, there is a plotline there if you want it. But I kind of skimmed the plotline, really. I think the things that really hooked me about this game, it wasn't the writing. It was actually the look, the feel, the moving through the nature, the depiction of nature, the sound that surrounds you, and the gameplay loop of carrying out this basic task of carrying your cameras out on tripods, arranging them to photograph the subjects of your investigation, going back and looking at your footage, kind of mellow, kind of easy to sink into, repetitive, quotidian, calm. And I really enjoy that in games. I think it sometimes takes a little bit of courage to strip back gameplay, to take away very, very gamey elements and to actually do something a little different and a little ingenious and a little less kind of demanding from a gameplay point of view. Like the demanding aspect of this game is probably more to do with patience and persistence and being up for the gameplay than it is the kind of the challenge of the gameplay, if you know what I mean. And I really enjoyed that. I really did. It reminded me the mood that I settled into when playing this was almost similar to the mood that I got from a game like Spiritfarer, maybe, where it's a completely non-violent game where you're just talking, you're carrying out repetitive activities, it looks nice and sounds nice, and it's kind of a mood that settles onto you. Nuts is a game that does manage to achieve that, even in this very short time. So it is a game that I really enjoyed, it's a game that I recommend, but it does have a couple of downsides, as any game will. Nothing is perfect after all. I played this one on an iPhone connected to a Backbone controller. It's a really sweet setup. If you have an iPhone with a nice screen, it's basically a Switch. And I did find that some of the controls were a little fiddly. For example, when you're using the video setup, there are lots of small buttons. And at first I was trying to use there's a mode that you flip into where you get a cursor, basically. And you move the cursor around to use the buttons. It's a little clunky. On a controller, it feels like perhaps it's meant for a mouse. If you do have the option of playing this game on a mouse and keyboard, I think, and you're used to that setup, that might be the way to play it, the optimal way to play it. It works fine, it's good, but it's a little clunky, a little awkward, perhaps better with a mouse. The second point is that on one of the larger levels, called 1-2-3, I think it's called, it's the most sprawling level, and I kept losing the trail of the squirrel that I was tailing, and I accidentally picked up the trail of the wrong squirrel, I think. I got a bit lost, I got turned around. I had to start over a couple of times, which actually frustrated me a little, made me fall off the game for a while. I came back like a week later and played that level again and got through it. But that one was, I don't know, it was a bit of a headache, that particular level. And it does, I think, from a narrative point of view, there are points at the game where you have a moment of shock or a moment of realization that's quite bold and it really sticks with you. I think it's at the end of the first chapter or the second chapter, actually, you'll find that the squirrels are up to something, let's put it that way. And at that moment, the narrative elements that are open to go to from that point are many. You're really curious about what those squirrels are up to. And the way that the game resolves is perhaps less bold than the way that it begins. So I did feel that the ending didn't quite live up to the promise of the first couple of chapters of the game, even though I did enjoy the whole thing, and I did enjoy the ending. I felt like it could have gone in so many directions. The one that it settled on perhaps wasn't as bold as I had kind of hoped. But that's all of my complaints about Nuts. I had a really good time with it. I do think that's common as well, actually, that ending syndrome. I felt the same way after I finished Firewatch. I felt that the ending kind of was a little soft, but I still really enjoyed Firewatch, and that game is considered an indie classic after all. So yeah, I liked Nuts overall. I thought it developed the gameplay very well. The mechanic was ingenious. The audio-visual presentation is spotless. Lots of decisions were made right in this game. Lots of small touches, like a lot of first-person games that deal with nature struggle with invisible wall syndrome, and I didn't really feel that in Nuts. Also, games that are very object-orientated can feel a little cluttered or like you've missed an object, and that problem was solved in the design of Nuts. It feels like they've solved or preempted or seen coming and fixed all of the kind of problems that the game could have had. I guess the only real niggle is the fiddly buttons on a controller. But overall, great game. Really enjoyed it. That's Nuts. So that was Nuts. I hope you enjoyed hearing about it. I certainly enjoyed playing it. I would like to give a little shout out to the group of people that made this game individually. It's quite an interesting bunch of people. It's not made by a studio with a name. It's made by five independent practitioners and a few helpers that did certain tasks for them. You can look them all up. The audio is by Almut Schwack, who also was the voice of Nina. It was directed by June Van Hove. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Paul Clarissou did the art, Charlene Putney did the writing, and Torvi Auskerson worked on design and development. And you can find all of them at nuts.game if you would like to look at the other projects that they have done and to follow them on their itch or on the various social media that they have. Interesting bunch of people, and an interesting, very multi-talented set of people that came together to design Nuts. So I'm very curious to see what all of them do next. I have played a game by Torvi called A Firm Handshake. It came from a game jam. It's a really fun little game in the times of COVID about a firm handshake, having a firm handshake, making friends, doing business. It's a really funny little game. You can look that one up. I think it's a free download on itch and Steam. Check it out. It's a fun 10 minutes. If you have played Nuts, or if you play it and have thoughts about it, or if you are going to play any of the other games I talked about today, Bioshock Infinite, if you have thoughts about that one, please come and chat to me on social media. I'm out there as Gaming in the Wild on Twitter mostly. I'm on there every day. I'm also on Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook as Gaming in the Wild. So come and say hello. My Twitter has been pretty interesting lately. I've posted a couple of questions. For example, what's a game that people would like to see turned into a Netflix series? And we got over 350 responses to that thread, some really interesting conversations going on. So if you've got ideas about what you'd like to see turned into a Netflix series or an HBO blockbuster, come and find me on Twitter at Gaming in the Wild and add your opinion. That's on my pinned tweet at the moment. If you've enjoyed the show, you're also welcome to join the Patreon group and come and talk to us all on Discord and support the show with $1 a month. That's at patreon.com/gamingin the wild. I'll be back next week with a new episode. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye for now.